This week, we're taking a look at Michigan's juvenile lifers and asking who gets a second chance. Right now, more than 300 Michigan prisoners are watching to see what judges and prosecutors will do now that the Supreme Court says it is illegal to give a juvenile a mandatory life sentence. As Michigan Radio's Rick Pluta reports, so many of those prisoners were locked up for life as teenagers in the 80s and 90s during the tough-on-crime era.
These days, Tony Tague is focused on menus and dishing out pizza and pasta at his Italian restaurant in Spring Lake, a resort town tucked between a small chain of lakes in West Michigan. 30 years ago, life was different. Tague was the Democratic prosecutor in neighboring Muskegon County and grappling with a crack cocaine crime wave that swept the Interstate 96 corridor from Detroit to Muskegon.
We saw a lot of guns on the street. We saw a lot of territorial fights between particularly in Muskegon, Detroit drug dealers coming in and trying to take over the drug trade, which ended up resulting in a lot of turf battles, a lot of shootings.
Tague says juvenile crime became a growing problem, largely because the drug trade adopted a business model that relied on giving kids guns and using them as soldiers and couriers.
Everyone knew that if you were juvenile, even if you were charged with a life felony, chances are you'd do a couple years in the juvenile system and you would be released at the latest on your 21st birthday.
Public frustration grew as the murder rate spiraled, and it wasn't just Muskegon. The same thing was occurring across the state of Michigan and across the country, says Frank Vandervoort with the University of Michigan Juvenile Justice Law Clinic.
There was this notion of super predators, right? This idea that we had this whole generation of children who lacked a conscience, who were basically antisocial, and who had access to guns, and they were behaving like adults, they were committing adult-level crimes, and so therefore they should be receiving adult-level penalties and punishments.
Vandervoort says the focus shifted from trying to rehabilitate juveniles who committed crimes to punishing them. And this thinking was bipartisan. President Bill Clinton, a Democrat, called for a federal crime bill, and states like Michigan joined in. Here's Republican Governor John Engler addressing the Michigan legislature in January of 1996.
Our policy is to do everything possible to help youth succeed. But if they break the law, they need to know with certainty there will be consequences.
There was just this wave of tough on crime, lock them all up, throw away the key.
John Truscott was Engler's press secretary at the time.
No sympathy at all for any of the cultural things that they were going through, neighborhoods, broken homes. And I think at the time we thought if we can't educate them properly and get kids on the right path, then they might be lost. So we need to protect people, and that means locking them up.
Michigan adopted some of the toughest juvenile justice policies in the country, including adult time for adult crimes, especially first-degree murder. And Frank Vandervoort says that required mandatory life without parole.
And so you saw more kids going to prison for longer periods of time, and more of them being sent to prison for life without parole.
And in Michigan, first-degree murder charges can be lodged against anyone connected with a murder or the crime that led to a murder. So accomplices, getaway drivers, gang members, people who never directly took a life were charged with first-degree murder. It's one of the nation's most sweeping murder laws, and critics like attorney Deborah LaBelle say using it against juveniles just went too far.
Michigan was one of the few states who reached down and automatically charged 14-year-olds, as low as 14, with a mandatory life without parole sentence.
Groups like the American Civil Liberties Union lobbied the legislature to rein in some of the harsher aspects of the law. Studies were launched on teenage brain development, and there was litigation originating in Michigan and other states. In 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Missouri's death sentence for people younger than 18. But Deborah LaBelle says juvenile life without parole is also a death sentence.
The jury has no choice. The judge has no choice. If you aid and abet or you're involved in an enterprise that is illegal and someone gets killed by someone else, you all get mandatory life in prison till you die.
6 years ago, LaBelle filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of hundreds of juvenile lifers in Michigan, seeking to give them a chance at parole. She says she felt she couldn't wait any longer because the state's first juvenile lifers started dying in prison.
Children who had been in prison since they were 14 and 15 years old got so old that they just started dying in the prison without any opportunity for release.
Her cause won a big victory in 2012. That's when the U.S. Supreme Court struck down mandatory life without parole for juveniles as cruel and unusual punishment, and said the punishment should only be applied in the rarest of cases. Michigan was among the states that tried to keep that decision from applying to juvenile lifers who were already serving the sentence.
I'm a man of faith, and I believe in forgiveness. But I also firmly understand that there are consequences to bad or evil decisions.
Attorney General Bill Schuette argued releasing them would break faith with and be needlessly cruel to the surviving family members of murder victims.
We need to make sure that in this discussion of teenage murders, we don't ignore or dismiss in a casual fashion the voices of victims.
But once again, the Supreme Court said automatic life without parole is cruel and unusual punishment, and it applies retroactively and in future cases. That means those juvenile lifers already serving deserved new sentences or parole hearings. Tony Tague, the former Muskegon County prosecutor, says taking another look at what Michigan did 30 years ago to deal with juvenile crime is probably worthwhile.
As I look back, perhaps reforms went a little too far, but on the other hand, at the time, as prosecutors, we needed tools to send a stronger message that juveniles involved in serious crime would be treated seriously.
Deborah LaBelle says many Michigan prosecutors are still not accepting the spirit or the letter of the decision that automatic life without parole violates the Constitution, and they're using every means they can to keep most of Michigan's 363 juvenile lifers from ever having a chance at freedom. And she says prosecutors still seek life without parole for new juvenile defendants in too many cases. Her solution? She has asked a federal judge to rule that no one charged as a juvenile can be sentenced to life without parole, and that no teenager is forever irredeemable in the eyes of the law. I'm Rick Pluta.